Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded on Friday, March the 19th, 2010. Soybeans rallied. We'll ask why today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in the half hour, we'll talk with our panelist, John Bondurant. He's at Bondurant Futures out of Memphis, Tennessee. And our panelists in studio are Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois, Dale Durkles of AgriVisor LLC from Bloomington, Illinois, and Jackie Bakes of the Stuart Peterson Group out of Champaign, Illinois.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Now let's open today's discussion with this question. Beans rallied 30 cents for the week. How unexpected was that jump, or was it? Dale Durkles.
Not totally unexpected. We had some technical parameters, number one, that were in the mix that I think were part of it. But the move really got started rolling with dollar weakness early in the week, and then some demand things kind of helped it along.
Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson.
Well, I think when we heard that the ships were backing up in Brazil and it implied that we were going to see more beans coming out of the United States, that really got things going, just giving us, you know, a sense that we could really, really be tight on those old ending stocks. And it also has helped when you looked at Russia, you know, saying that they're going to take pork and that they're close to getting a chicken agreement going, just another implication that we'd be feeding more animals.
And Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities.
I think that, and the realization that South America's huge crop is going to take a long time to get to market because their infrastructure hasn't improved much, and so it's tough to get those beans through the same old hose that's been there for the last few years.
Let's come back to that in a minute because I want you to explain really what that means. But that was one of the things that moved the marketplace earlier in the week, and I'm not sure that I got the idea of what the logistic problem was or whether it was different than something that had been in the past, but maybe you can help explain it. May soybeans this week had a $9.64 top, a bottom at 921 and three quarters. Their settlement price on the week at 961 and three quarters. Remember, we give you weeks low, weeks high, and the weekly settlement from Friday to Friday. The trade difference was 36 and a quarter cents to the upside for the May beans. November contract at 942, up 28. Back to the logistical problems that were reported this week and seem to have pushed the marketplace higher. It seems to me that that happens every year, so I'm surprised that the market was really surprised. Was there something new in it?
Well, look at this year's crop size compared to the last couple, and it's so huge, but it doesn't mean they can get it there any quicker. So it takes a week to get a trailer truck from the farm to where you need it. And costs, they were saying today, $2 just to get it from the combine to the market. So that slows everything down.
Well, that's a combination. Another thing here that kind of fits in with the $2 thing is the fact that bean prices, when you get out into the interior in a lot of places, are underneath some of the cost of production out there. But the issue, you know, I'm kind of surprised it took this long to get there. I was talking about this with another fellow analyst in London back about 2.5 weeks ago now, and we were already hearing about the backhaul and trucks backing up and boats not getting loaded. And it's just this week that it really finally came to light.
Okay, so I want to go back to this interior because we've heard that they've not been moving beans as quickly, or that farmers haven't made the sales. And obviously, if they're under production, cost of production, they're just waiting it out then, aren't they?
To a certain degree. You know, there are beans that are going to come into the pipeline because you got to understand down in Brazil, there are an awful lot of beans that are priced not actually as a real base, but basically farmers trade off bushels or bags of beans for inputs. And so there is a certain amount of beans that flow into the pipeline once harvest begins. And they don't have the kind of storage infrastructure back in the interior as what we do here in the U.S. So it does push them in. But above and beyond that, because beans have fallen down below cost of production in a lot of places up in Mato Grosso in particular, sales have really just hit a screech halt here recently.
Well, and another thing that you have to take into account is, you know, we're so used to seeing the rail system in the U.S. just move everywhere. If they want to rail beans anyplace, they've got two different rail systems in Brazil that aren't even the same metric gauge, so they can't even join up with each other. Makes the logistics situation even more serious.
You know, and to go along with that, Todd, you know, when we talk about trucking beans, for the listeners out there, they need to remember it's like filling a truck in central Illinois and driving to New Orleans. That's how far that is.
On it's not a mud road.
Yeah, on a mud road. You know, it's not like going
tires.
It's not like going 100 miles or so over to the river or over to a rail point. You're talking about driving from central Illinois all the way to New Orleans in a truck.
Well, you're also talking about roving bands of bandits. So a lot of those guys can't even travel at night. They travel during daylight hours only.
Yeah, the backup, I was reading a story today, the backup down in Paranagua was like 17 kilometers.
It's a long way. We talked about that Wednesday of this week during the closing market report, how long those lines were. And that was just, that was a backup. That was a line to get to get.
Yeah, that's a line.
That's amazing. I can't.
That's after you get to New Orleans.
Yeah.
if you make it. Well, so does it mean, what does it mean when you have that big a crop and that slow of a logistical start? How long is the tail on that crop for the soybean market in the United States?
They will still be moving beans when we are harvesting beans here.
After.
Well, yeah, after.
So that's really the competition. It's going to be in our new crop. It's not necessarily in our old crop, and I don't think a lot of people have thought about that so much, but it's just been the talk all winter about the huge crop that everybody wanted to play the bear side.
So do you want to take that up just a bit? What does that mean, Jackie? I mean, I kind of understand what it means, but this is a long-tailed crop that could really have an impact.
Well, it could spread itself out all the way until we're done harvesting. And what does it mean? It just means, you know, we're extremely sold on beans that we currently have. You know, we're oversold in some respects because some of those beans are already committed without actually being within ownership. So it could mean that it could drive prices a great deal higher. Now, you know, we might see some
in
hedging.
In the short term.
In the short term. We could see hedging come in against that. But I agree with Dale. I think it's going to have a much bigger impact on new crop than it is on old crop.
So the rally that we saw this week might not be so unexpected as some of that news came out and might really fit as a piece of the puzzle that we've been talking about, which has been bearish soybeans for quite a while.
Where do you get old crop if you need them? China today or yesterday bought more beans from the U.S. because they can't get enough out of that logistics situation for right now.
Well, and I think it's really apparent, too, when you see that market divorce itself from the American dollar, from the crude oil market, we saw all kinds of trading going on to the higher side during the week this week, even though the dollar went higher, and crude really, really fell apart today.
I want to come back to a decision then, because at the end of the month, USDA will release some numbers about acreage. They'll also release some quarterly grain stocks reports. Maybe we should talk about both of those. Farmers will be making decisions about whether they want to plant corn or whether they want to plant soybeans. If you look far enough out at this great big bean crop, and that's in South America, that may have this really long tail, does it give you a different idea of where you might want to go? And there's some argument about acreage, but I think the argument basically says I'm going to plant more corn and I'm going to plant more beans at this point, that more acres are going to come in altogether. But I'm here in our part of the world, it's a finite set of acres, and so they're going to switch from one to the other. Do you think there's some one way or the other that they ought to go?
I don't think that's still a clear-cut case, because when I look at the implication of long-term price cycles, they've been telling me about major lows doing corn and beans, both even crude oil, coming at the end of 2010, beginning of 2011. when I start trying to piece together, you know, downside prices, that still keeps me in a relationship that's kind of just a balance, whether corn's going to be better, beans are going to be better. So I don't think that's a really easy clear-cut decision, and I think basically it's going to be a matter of the farmer needs to decide, you know, according to his own economic structure, which one he plants, and also tending to look back and seeing, you know, what the insurance guarantees basically do for him.
Well, and I won't disagree with that at all. I think one of the things that, you know, with going into a spring like we are at this point in time, not really feeling confident about what the planting is going to be. We did a meeting the other night and polled the room, and about 3% of the guys said they were going to increase beans, 3% said they were going to increase corn, and the balance said they haven't got a clue just yet as to what they're going to do because they're not sure how many times they're going to have to work the fields or anything else.
I think that the people that are going to switch have already made up their minds. They've already sold ahead for those extra ones that they're either going to plant a corn or beans, and they've already got that done, that they've sold corn for $4.20 to $4. They've sold beans for $10 to $10.20 back in December and January, and they've made their decisions.
Right.
I think the big thing here has nothing to do with corn or soybean prices. The big thing at this point has to do with, number one, weather, but also weather as it impacts, can I get nitrogen on timely? Because I think the nitrogen issue is going to be really maybe the big key up here in the Midwest that's going to tend to guide what we plant in the final end. If we compress our planting time down and you start drawing on nitrogen real fast, you're going to run into spots where you could actually physically run out of nitrogen because we can't get it up to the Midwest fast enough.
It wasn't last year.
But last year, we had a lot more nitrogen that was put down in the fall before. This year, anywhere across the Midwest, except in small local areas, even a client I have clear in northwestern Iowa only got half the nitrogen put on that he normally puts on. So you've got to pull a lot more nitrogen up the pipeline, and that's where the bulk of it comes from. Some will come barge than what you normally do. And I think that's going to be a big issue people are going to worry about. I think that and the weather is why people don't know how to really position themselves on acreage this year.
Corn this week, a May contract with a high of 376.5, a low of 362. Settlement price here at 374.5. It was up 10.25 on the week. December at 403.5, up 9.75. I'll get the rest of the grains in. May wheat, a 498.25 high, low at 476.75. Settlement price, penny and a half, lower at 483.75. July at 496.5, down a penny and a half, and we'll do the livestock, too, at the moment. April live cattle, a 98.70 top, bottom at 95.07.5. Settlement price, $98. They were up $2.90. March feeders at 104.80, up 180 for the week. Lean hogs, April contract, 73.47.5, the high, the low at 71. Settlement price at $73.40 for 100 pounds. And the April lean hogs finished 7.5 cents higher. So let's go back to the corn market just a bit. And maybe not the market, but planting, Jackie Vakes, and acreage. Farmers are faced with a whole tier of problems. Anhydrous ammonia has been mentioned already. I talked to Emerson Nafziger earlier this week again about that. His suggestion was that if it's too wet to plant, it's too wet to put on anhydrous ammonia, and that there might be a whole lot of nitrogen, and not necessarily side dress anhydrous that goes on after the fact, but that the residue that's there from last year is going to create a problem one way or the other. We're really looking at this point, unless it turns off pretty dry going into the beginning of this growing season, with a really rough start for the planting season.
Well, we certainly are. I think that when you look at the fact that a lot of the stocks that are out there haven't broken down, just like you talked, we've got compaction because we had a wet harvest season. It isn't just a gimme that somebody can go in and decide to no-till necessarily. So are you asking me what I think people should be planting? What exactly are you asking me? Yes,
you
we know, started with a hard
a question,
season.
So we're going to have a hard start to the season, and I did not ask a question. So the question really is, do you have an idea what you think you'd like your clients to how you'd like them divided up? And then I want you to take up the grain stocks report too, because it seems like it might be an important one as we get into that the end of this year.
Well, I think in most cases, in the clients that we're talking to, and I mean, they're all over the place, most of the guys are saying less corn on corn acres. That'll be the first place. If they're going to cut any corn, it's going to be the corn on corn acres. And then you've really got to look at the individual areas. You know, here in Illinois, we can pencil, you know, corn and beans are pretty much a push on the insurance situation. So it's by each individual state that you really have to look at it. And when you look at the grain stocks report, I think the grain stocks report is probably one of the most important we're going to have this year. Grain
stocks. I think in a lot of areas we had during harvest was so done by 10 than when I went out and worked ground. So there's a lot more ground work than people think. I think the nitrogen, there's already a lot of 28 that's going to be put on the side. I think a lot of that's already been worked on as far as planting.
Grain stocks.
I'll agree with what Jackie had to say. Two things in here. Number one, we had a huge disagreement back in January between the bean stocks and the bean production number there that we've got to see how that works out, that could end up giving us a friendly bean stocks number. On the corn side of the equation, you got the light test weight issue, and you had 7.5 billion bushel on farm. You know, was that an accurate number? Was it an overestimate? You know, what kind of demand? You know, just a lot of unknowns on grain stocks. It's a huge one this time.
When we return, we'll talk with John Bondurant of Bondurant Futures. You're listening to Commodity Week. It was recorded on the 19th day of March, 2010.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Warm March weather was enjoyed by all this week as high pressure dominated the weather picture. Temperatures this week were above normal, ranging from just above normal in southern Illinois to 10 degrees above normal in northern Illinois. Most of this was contributed by much above normal low temperatures. High temperatures this week actually were below normal in the southern third of the state. There was not much north to south gradient in high temperatures, with highs uniformly in the 60s on Wednesday and Thursday. There was no rain to speak of this week, aside from a few sprinkles Sunday and Monday in the wake of the low that passed through over the weekend. There will be some changes coming up for the week ahead that will likely bring us back to March weather reality. A storm system lifting into the Midwest from the southern plains will bring a damp and cool weekend to Illinois, and most of the state will likely see some precipitation. It should warm up again toward the middle of next week, followed by the passage of a cold front, which will bring in colder air for next Friday and Saturday. It looks like we are entering a period of active weather, with systems likely to move through Illinois every 2 to 3 days, and most of which will be accompanied by some precipitation. For the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilbert.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. This edition of Commodity Week was recorded on Friday, March the 19th, 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio are Dale Durkles of AgriVisor out of Bloomington, Illinois, Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson from Champaign, Illinois, and Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Our guest today on Commodity Week is John Bondurant. He's the president of Bondurant Futures in Memphis, Tennessee. He's a speculator and a fund manager and specializes in the grain and the cotton trades. He also claims to be one of the few fund managers who uses fundamentals rather than technicals to make his trading decisions. Among the other notables, Bondurant is a past director of the National Futures Association, and he farms, of course, a very large number of acres. Again, John Bondurant, thank you, and welcome to Commodity Week.
It's nice to be here.
Well, we had some discussions here about the acreage that will be reported by producers at the end of this month. And while we were in between the program, the agreement was that farmers really won't know what they're going to plant, at least in this part of the world. So that report might not be very important because they're the ones that are making the decisions and telling USDA. And it's really the grain stocks report that we ought to be looking at. What do you say?
Oh, I guess the grain stocks report, but I think the acreage intention is also quite important because we have a lot of wheat acreage that didn't get planted. We have acreage coming out of CRP, so you can argue that around 11 or 12 million acres are going to have to be redistributed, if assuming that the Dakotas don't lose 3 million acres to a wet spring like they did last year. So it's a big report, and I agree that the stocks and oil position is going to be interesting. They probably overestimated feed demand because animal numbers have turned up less than expected during the quarter. The hog inventory, instead of being down 2%, looks like it's more like down 5%. So it's going to be a big report.
John, this is Dale. Where you're at, give Illinois and Midwestern farmers some insight on what's going to happen with the acreage mix down in the Delta area between cotton and corn and beans. And I know we're not going to have as much soft wheat.
Well, as I drove up to that meeting last week, being 1,000 miles through Illinois, Indiana, back through Kentucky, and back through western Tennessee, I sold 5 fields a week, period. Corn acreage is going down the south. Bean acreage probably somewhere around the same. Cotton acreage up, rice acreage up. On the scheme of things, rice is the number one profitability crop. Beans a second. Corn's next, then cotton.
You know, John, this is Jackie. If you were sitting here in Illinois and you were running a farm in Illinois,
mm-hmm.
you know, looking at the way the weather's been and everything else, what would still be your bias as far as what you'd be looking to plant?
I think I'd be looking to plant beans on the idea that the profitability is probably a push with corn, and you can get it in. You don't know, you know, you might have to get things rowed up and in. I'm a farmer here, so I guess I'd be leaning towards beans. Not as much field preparation required.
On your ground where you're at, is that what are you going to do, or do you know yet?
I know exactly what I'm going to do. Well, not totally. I'm losing 2,500 acres of corn. About 700 of that's going to rice, and the rest of it's going to beans. I may lose another 500 acres of beans. I'm debating that I might put in cotton on one particular piece of ground under a pivot, which usually does real well, but that's what I'm doing. We start planting rice next week, and a lot of farmers are still up in the air. I mean, if cotton were to rally some and beans to go down, we might get a late shift. If the beans stay up, you know, we're right at planting season. April 1st is I start planting beans usually in late March in central Mississippi and around the first week in April in Arkansas, so we're right on it. And once the grains go in, that's it for cotton.
We had a lot.
So, but it's volatile right now.
We had a pretty good discussion up front about the long tail that might be involved with the soybeans coming out of the big crop in South America. Do you agree with that discussion?
Yes, wholeheartedly. What I really look at is, it looks to me like the supply in relation to usage is going to be around 26% on beans, which is an incredibly big carryover and one that's usually associated with beans in the $4 to $6 range for low, and that's been true in the last decade. And we're still there, and the very fact that we're going to have a big tail just means you might have defer a lot of stuff into new crop. We'll have more competition with new crop with Brazil, and I still worry about China. I worry they're in a big financial bubble. So
John,
that bothers me a lot.
John, this is Dale. Since you're in the money management field, I've got an intriguing question because I've been following this quote-unquote outside money, passive money for about 6-7 years now.
Yeah.
Do you think that's going to continue to come into commodities, or do you think here for a while maybe we're going to take a break? What's your perception about money coming into the flow over the near term? The long term, it'll probably stay there.
Well, I think one of the reasons we've had the big money flow is a lot of people look at the U.S. deficit and just say it's completely out of control and we're printing money like wild and need some sort of inflation hedge. So one to look at is commodities. It's not necessarily, there's no provable fact that weak dollar, strong dollar really affects exports particularly, because we're always sort of a residual supplier. There's always somebody that will undercut us that has no storage, et cetera. But I think that's a big factor in this whole deal is fear of the dollar and fear of paper currencies in general. Look at gold prices.
Can I ask you, John, all we hear about is the health care bill and the potential for this health care bill to pass this weekend or not pass. What do you think will happen to commodities if we actually see that happen?
Well, I think if we see it pass, the instant thought will be that it's a much bigger deficit, because I don't think anybody that's reasonable really believes that the health care bill will be deficit neutral. It's just a joke if you think that. So I think the people are going to say, well, that just means the U.S. deficit is going to get bigger and bigger, and therefore the dollar eventually gets whaled.
On these extra beans that you're planning to plant, what percentage of those have you sold or covered with options or anything like that?
80%.
Can you take up your fears for the China's economy and the bubble that you seem to believe it might be on at this point?
Well, you read the stories about the ghost condo cities, in other words, huge cities of condos built, no one home, parking lots full of automobiles where you have this huge increase in auto sales, but they're not going anywhere but just sitting unused, and you have tremendous vacancies in Beijing and commercial real estate. It sounds so much like Miami, Florida, just it's scary. I mean, putting out all the stimulus dollars, cheap money, building buildings, no one's in them, and it's very similar to me.
How quickly do you think problems will come to pass?
I don't know. We saw in the U.S., we saw an obvious real estate bubble for several years. And everybody says, well, it's going to be killer when it starts down, and it didn't start down. And all of a sudden, one day, it did start down, and the consequences were far worse than anybody thought. It's more of a confidence thing. If every one day everybody wakes up and says, we don't have any confidence in the GDP figures that are put out by China because we know it's a communist government, and B, we see real problems there, it could explode overnight, just like our deal did. So I don't really know, but there's some fairly smart people that are saying it's the biggest bubble of all times.
John, going hand in hand with that, do you think that's one of the issues that the Chinese really are just so reluctant to let the yuan appreciate higher?
Yes.
Yeah, because that would have real negative repercussions if they already have a fragile economy as it is.
Yeah, and they got, 50% of their GDP growth is capital expenditures, which a lot of that's foreign money pouring in to build factories, et cetera. So it's a delicate line they're straddling.
What happens here if they fail?
Oh, well, it will be a catastrophe. I mean, if they, all the bullish things you read about commodities, they can never get away from India and China. Growth is going to pull the rest of the world out. If China especially goes bad, then all the pro-growth stories go out the window.
John, just to tag on to that, then we're hearing all these senators that are sending all kinds of letters over saying that they want the yuan to start to float more or float freely.
Right.
And, China's saying it'll destroy our export market. Isn't that an implication for us in commodities also if we start to create trade sanction issues with them?
15 seconds, John.
Yes, for sure.
That's good enough, John. Thank you much.
Oh, it's a great pleasure.
John Bondurant is with Bondurant Futures. He's out of Memphis, Tennessee. Our guest on the phone line and our panelist in studio have been Dale Durkles of AgriVisor, Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson, and Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities. You have a great week. You've been listening to Commodity Week. It was recorded on the 19th day of March 2010 and is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason.